Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water, sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Praise the Lord. This is Rob Christensen with the theme of my every blog. It's Visible Secrets, Invisible Power. And we're in a crisis. I think everybody knows that. The world's changing so fast in these last few months, this year. All these events are happening so fast, it's hard to keep up. But I'll do my best. And first of all, to explain, visible secrets are the cobweb sky jets up high that we see in the sky on occasion. We've all seen them because it's worldwide. There are trails from jets, and nothing I never knew. I had to be taught. I had to take courage and seek information. I had to be curious what's going on up there. Why are there lines someday and not others? And the only way I found out was by radio. Basically, a voice called out from the wilderness. Times long ago, it was Jesus Christ. His voice called out from the wilderness. In times today, it was a voice of a person living in the wilderness, but calling out in the radio. And that voice has awoken me, or has awoken me to a very stark reality that unless humans start awakening, as a species, our planet could end up being gone. That's really something I don't want to live with, but it's an awakening process. It's a spiritual process. And as I've had in my poems, since I like to make rhymes, a backfire halts the forest blaze. A spiritual fire halts those who raise. And raise means destruction, war, death, illness, fear, war, and that's what we're facing right now. And it seems inevitable, and maybe as we evolve through time, and as predicted in various religions or various origin stories, or even in the words of Christ, we're going to come to a purge. In the Bible, the book of Revelations discusses this purge. Armageddon might be a word, or just fire and brimstone, whatever the case. So it goes deep, and I want to get now into the precept for today, which is sayings of Christ forbidden from the Bible. Why? Part two. And I'll just read on here. Christianity depends not on Jesus, but on Jesus' miracles, that he created bread out of stone. And I could go on, et cetera, et cetera. But no miracle can prove anything. Miracles happen around him of far greater significance. Yes, seeing, but this is not concerned with the physical eye. It is concerned with a deeper spiritual blindness. And it goes on for other examples. I have quoted a discussion from Osho, author of The Mustard Seed, an interpretation of Gnostic teachings of Jesus the mystic. I will discuss why this is such a critical saying that can guide us to deal with the ugly reality of human-caused planetary destruction of many forms, namely climate engineering. And I like to acknowledge Brother Nakomi in a recent blog that he did about the falling, where we fall unless we have faith, unless, you know, we act and struggle diligently to go away from all the lusts that kind of rule our desires. But in the scripture of Peter, there's a series of ways that we can come towards God and become and do his will. And it starts with faith, you know, and it ends with charity, brotherly love, and you have this calmness and lovingness, this fragrance about the way you live that affects other people, because you're just a genuine person being yourself. However imperfect you are, you accept who you are and you do all you can do to be connected to life. And, you know, in my opinion, this voice in the wilderness that is calling us now in this time of so-called Armageddon, the same thing that the Hopi Indians draw on a rock so beautifully done, so short and concise, a picture of two paths, one ending, the fire and brimstone path, and another, which is a higher path above, and one that connects below, a bridge to a lower path where we're rooted back to earth, back to the Garden of Eden, where we become members as species of earth and members of God's grace, or, you know, we start disconnecting from creation. That path that separates us, divides us. And short term, you know, just go only with what we need. And it ends up in a mess. So just thought I'd bring these things out. And just to further discuss what Brother Nakomi offered, where the Bible in with this forbidden verse of Jesus, you know, why didn't they include it? I will share that verse very soon, but I just want to point out how I found this perfect connection with two of the forbidden verses as Nakomi discussed. And, you know, he said, you're not going to find perfection, you know, we're weak in the flesh, we have flaws. I don't care what you say, Nakomi says, you know, that's, we do the best we can and we're just not going to be perfect, but that doesn't mean we can't try hard, that we can't elevate ourselves on a higher pedestal. So we abound in these things of doing well when we follow the path that Peter indicates. Faith, virtue, knowledge, charity, you know, those series of actions that we can take. So in Hebrews 11, verse 1, Brother Job read that and contributed that very, very eloquently. We seek substance of things that we hope for. We seek evidence of things not seen. We believe it's getting done. And then Hebrews, verse 6, again, Nakomi asked, what matters is you can pretend through faith But do you really believe in God as you practice your faith? That's a critical question. And in my previous blog, he hits right on the message that I had in that blog, is that, you know, we can pray, we can fast, we can do things, but in the end, it may be harmful. We may be just fooling ourselves. We're just seeking our own selfish interest, and we're doing this not to become one with God, but we're just doing this for our own ego, so to speak. We're not diligently seeking him. So are we just pretending to be a godly person? That's one thing that Nakomi related. And they leave, you know, as he's a practiced person of faith and a Christian, and people come to him, you know, with their problems, and they feel they're solved, but they come back later sad and depressed. So somehow they're missing the point. They're too trapped in their own selfish lusts or desires, and they're not really taking those steps toward our Creator. The second part, also, I believe that was in Hebrews, is you're wanting to see something, but that ain't faith, as Nakomi says. That ain't faith. You're wanting to see some evidence of something happening that will reassure you that, you know, your prayers are being answered and things like that. So it's not a happening, we come back sad and pressed to our minister or our spiritual leader. We're looking for those miracles. And that's what, to me, is a very important forbidden statement of Jesus Christ. Well, not forbidden per se, but it just wasn't included in the Bible. It just didn't fit in with Western culture. I'm going to discuss further on how, in my personal belief, there's tremendous evidence that in the 30 years that Christ is unaccounted for, you know, his childhood, his babyhood, and his adulthood at the age of 30 to 33 until he was crucified, that there's 30 years unexplained, and there's very strong, compelling evidence that Jesus traveled to the culture of the people of the first light, you know, the more ancient civilizations, Egypt, India, and learned from them. So I'll go on and I'll read the portion, the reading of the Poet of the Ultimate, which is Jesus the Mystic. It's the 15th saying of the Gnostic Gospel. And it's very poetic. It's mystical. It's not something, you know, that's tangible that you can just touch. But here it is. Jesus said, "I am the light that is above them all. I am the all. And the all came from me, and the all attained to me. Cleave a piece of wood, and I am there. Lift up the stone, and you will find me there." So I'm going to go on and read portions of the explanation that Osho gives to this saying. And bear with me. I tend to ramble. I tend to go off in directions. I'm just going to try to take snippets because it's a very lengthy discussion. And every word in there is meaningful, so it's hard to select sometimes. But here we go. I'm just going to read some of it. Jesus was trained in one of the oldest secret schools. The school was called Essenes. The teaching of the Essenes is pure Vedanta. That's why Christians don't have record of what happened to Jesus before his 30th year. They have a little record of his childhood, and they have a record after his 30th year to 33rd, when he was crucified. They know a few things, but a phenomenon like Jesus is not an accident. It is a long preparation. It cannot happen just any moment. Jesus was continually being prepared during these 30 years. He was first sent to Egypt, and then he came to India. In Egypt, he learned one of the oldest traditions of secret methods. Then in India, he came to know about the teachings of Buddha, the Vedas, the Upanishads, and he passed through a long preparation. Those days are not known because Jesus worked in these schools as an unknown disciple. And Christians have knowingly dropped those records because they would not like the Son of God to also be a disciple of somebody else. They would not like the very idea that he was prepared, taught, trained. That looks humiliating. They think the Son of God comes absolutely ready. Nobody comes absolutely ready. If somebody is absolutely ready, then he cannot come. In this world, you always enter as imperfect. You know, as Nakomi said, perfection simply disappears from the world, from this world. Perfection is not of this world, cannot be. It is against the very law. Once somebody is perfect, whole life enters into a vertical dimension. This has not to be understood. You progress on a horizontal plane from A to B, from B to C, and D, and so on up to Z. Horizontal in line from past to present, from present to future. This is the way of the imperfect soul, just like water flowing in a river from the hills and plains to the sea, in a line, horizontal, always maintaining its own level. Perfection moves in vertical lines, not horizontal. From A, it does not go to B. From A, it goes higher, then A, then higher, still higher. And this line, for those who live on this line, perfection simply disappears. It is not there because they look into the future, because they can look into the future or in the past. They can look back. Perfect man is not there. They can look ahead, but he is not there. They can look here. He is not there. Because a new line of vertical progression has started. He is going higher and higher and higher. He moves in eternity, not in time. Eternity is vertical. That's why it's eternal now. There is no future to it. If you move in a line, there is future. If you move from A to B, B is the future, and so on and so forth. I could read on. But a soul which becomes perfect moves in a different dimension altogether, from A to A1 to A2 to A3. And this is eternity. It lives in the eternal now. That's why it disappears from the world. And just to understand, you know, when we're at complete calmness and just feeling heavenly, we don't sense time. We're vertical. We're just in the now. We're not worried about the future. We're not regretting the past. That's part of the explanation here. People who can live that way all the time have no time. They don't know time. And in that state, they can be very courageous. They are courageous because if you're connected to God, then you can do God's will and so on and so forth. Let me skip on a little bit more, find where I've got some markings, but I just find these so profound that this man came to the United States in the 60s, I believe it was. He became a cult figure, obviously attracted people, and this guy had a bunch of Rolls Royces, and he disturbed, you know, civilization just as Jesus did, Western civilization, that is, in the United States. He lived here and taught, and he had his own, clinics, his own way of teaching people. But to say Jesus was perfect when he was born, to emphasize this fact, Christians have dropped all the records. But Jesus was as much a seeker as you. He was as much a mustard seed as you are. He became a tree, a great tree, and millions of birds of heaven took shelter in him. But he was also a mustard seed. Remember that even a Mahariva, a Buddha, a Krishna, they are all born imperfect because birth belongs to imperfection. There is no birth for the perfect. When you are perfect, then there is no transmigration. This training of Jesus, moving into Egypt and India, learning from Egyptian secret societies, then Buddhist schools, then Hindu Vedanta, made him a stranger to the Jews. Why did he become so much a stranger to the Jews? Why couldn't the Jews absorb him? Why couldn't they forgive him? They have not forgiven him yet. What was the reason? He was the beginning of something alien, something foreign. He introduced some secret which didn't belong to the race. That's why the crucifixion happened. Now, Hindus tolerated Buddha because whatsoever he was saying was not alien. He may have contradicted Hinduism, but he can contradict only the superficial Hinduism. Even in his contradiction, he proves the deeper Hinduism right. He may say that the establishment has gone wrong. He may say that the organization has gone wrong. He may say then all the followers have gone wrong. But he cannot say that the Hindus are basically wrong. And I could go on and on with that. But so let me continue with another portion of this reading. But Jesus is not only revolutionary. He doesn't belong either. How has it happened that he doesn't belong to the Jews? Christians have no answer for it. From where did he bring this alien teaching? From Egypt and from India. India has been a source of all religions. India has been the basic source even of those religions which are against Hinduism. Why has it happened that India has been the basic source of all religions? India is the oldest civilization, and the whole mind of India has been working and working in the dimension of religion. It has come upon all the secrets of religion. No secret is unknown. In fact, for thousands of years, you have not been able to teach any secret to India about religion because they know all. They have discovered all. They have completed the whole journey in a way. So all that is beautiful in religion, wherever it is, you can be certain that somehow it comes from the source. Just as, and I think this is important, because, you know, cultures have different stories. Just as the Greek mind is the source of science, the whole scientific development comes from the Greek mind, the logical mind, the Aristotelian mind. All mysticism comes from India. And only two types exist in the world. One is Greek and the other is Indian. If you are basically a Greek mind, and this is Western culture, it is impossible to understand India at all because it looks absurd. Whatsoever they say looks unproven. Whatever statements they make look meaningless. Aristotle will be an absolute foreigner in India because he believes in definitions, clear-cut demarcations, distinctions. He believes in the law of contradiction, that two contradictory things cannot be together. A cannot be A and not A simultaneously. That is impossible. A man cannot be alive and dead simultaneously. That is impossible. Apparently, he is right. Now, Hindus believe in contradiction. They say man is alive and dead. Thus, you know, Jesus said to his disciples and inviting them to join him on his mission, he said, leave the dead to bury the dead. So that is a saying, you know, that its roots seem very strongly part of the India, the ancient way of viewing things. Let the dead bury the dead. So, again, Hindus believe in contradiction. They say man is alive and dead, both simultaneously, because life and death are not two things. You cannot demarcate them. The Greek mind is mathematical, and the Hindu mind is not a separate one. The universe was not created in time and finished. It is created each moment. It is being created each moment because it is God's own being. How can I explain that? The one life. In other words, we're all separate objects as people, as individuals. But are we not all part of the one life? You know, That is what God is. So the universe was not, well, let me not repeat here. It is being created each moment because it is God's own being. Just as you move, you sing, you love, so God creates. Every moment he is creating. And the creation is never separate. It is his movement, his dance. That's why the Upanishads can say, Aham Brahmasam. I butchered that one. The Upanishads can say, the seers who have come to know this secret can say, I am God. And nobody thinks this is blasphemy. This is a truth. Jews never say, I am God. This is blasphemy. Nothing can be worse than this assertion. You trying to be God? A creature trying to be God? A slave trying to assert that he is a master? This is egoism. What is pure religion in Vedanta is egoism for Jews and Mohammedans. Vedanta says this is not ego because this feeling that I am God happens only when the I has disappeared completely. When you are no more, when the house is vacant and the boat is empty, then suddenly you become aware that you are the all. If you are there, how can you think that you are the all? If you are there, then you have a boundary, a personality. Then your assertion is false. When the I disappears, when there is egolessness, only then can you feel you are the all. Jesus' assertion comes from the Upanishads. And the first thing to be remembered, the creation and the creator are not two, they are one. The second thing to remember, ordinary mathematics says that the part is never equivalent to the whole. The part can never be the whole. In mechanisms, it is so. Take a part of your car. The part cannot be the car. It is so obvious. You cut your hand is not you. The part can be the whole. This is ordinary logic. Or a part cannot be the whole. This is ordinary logic. And if the world is a mechanical thing, then it is true. But Vedanta says that existence is organic, not mechanical. With organic unity, a different type of mathematics becomes applicable. The part is the whole. This is the greatest absurdity. And that's why they could say, I am God, because I am just a God is the all. But how can the part be the whole? If there is a mechanical relationship between me and existence, then this is not possible. But if there is an organic unity, then this is possible. And there is organic unity. You exist not as a separate unit complete unto yourself. No. You exist not as an island. You exist as a wave of the ocean in organic unity. You are one. The ocean goes on moving and waving in you. You cannot exist without the ocean. And if you understand deeply, the ocean cannot exist without you. You are totally joined together. And I think I'll stop there. And it's nice to have the convenience of technology. I can walk and do this radio show instead of be sitting. And I can let my cat in. So just a brief little break here. But I'm going to go on discussing what I'd like to talk about with geoengineering, climate engineering, Dane Wigington, to update. And one of the updates I have is how Dane explains his knowledge of why we are in such a Armageddon crisis right now. It's so important for people to start making a decision. Are we going to hold on to the good old days where we can drive a car, we can go to the grocery store and get an energy drink, or, you know, just help ourselves and or go on a trip for thousands of miles and just, you know, enjoy the sunshine? It ain't happening anymore. And this pandemic, all these complications going on and making us so miserable, what do we do? You know, the question Dane asked is, do we scrap for what little is left and fight amongst each other in desperation as the planet, you know, with its cancer starts to collapse and more fires, more floods, hell and high water, you know? Or do we just drop some of these personal fears and interests and desires and just say, look, we got to connect with people. We got to work as a team to understand how to, you know, love each other and not just get caught up in this political divide, political drama, political theater. So I'll start talking. My pet cat, our loving cat, is back in, and I'll take a look at some of the updates on Global Alert News. Let me get to the right page here. Pardon my, as I almost guaranteed, that's one of my flaws. I'm not perfect. I tend to scramble a little bit, so I've just got to forgive me as I find the page I was looking for. Well, let me just continue some things off the top of my head. One of them is Phoenix, Arizona. You know, the weather is so important because that's the ultimate war against humanity. If we think we're gods and we can manipulate, control the weather or warfare other countries by drying the climate in their area, think again. Because Phoenix, Arizona, if you think it's cold here in Minnesota where I live, which it is, where we just had a snowstorm and it's way below normal, in Arizona, they had 144 degrees or 144 days above normal, way above normal. In fact, 144 days above 100 degrees. We're talking, what, 5 months? Every day is above 100 degrees. Now, imagine how does the web of life live in such conditions? Is that not an indication when these records are breaking? You know, since 1896, the Greek style way of doing things, of measuring, you know, that's healthy. That's good that we have science to measure. That's important because it does document that there's been nothing like this. Both California and Arizona set heat records, you know, just when you take all the combined temperatures over the last year, records that just have not compared to. Is it any surprise where California has wildfires unprecedented? Dane Wigington, author of geoengineeringwatch.org, said this well over 10 years ago in his 20-year struggle to give his personal wants in life away in order to go with God and spread the news, to spread the spot fires of awareness that to this fossil fuel fiesta that we've been living in and thriving with, that it's over, that we have to wake up and once again become members of the earth, that species, as a species, we belong to earth. It's not the other way around. The earth does not belong to us. So again, we get so deeply into the material world, we can fake ourselves as spiritual. We can pray, we can fast, but then our actions, our, you know, our consumptive ways of life don't prove that. And it's disappointing. Just pardon as I continue. I guess I shuffle things around as I go into my blog, but all right. If there's anybody listening, I'd welcome question or a little discussion. Well, maybe it's healthy to go off the top of the head. I lost the four-page sheet of papers, so I'll just continue on with what's on the top of my head, some of the surface things that I remember from Global Alert News. And let me tell you, it's all one has to do is go to geoengineeringwatch.org, and then you'll see the Saturday date, and you'll see an image box. And the last image box was pretty amazing. It's tiny, but if you click it on, it will enlarge. Dane shows that he captured on satellite. These are available. Satellite photos are available. And, you know, you can find out in his website how to do that. But the ridiculously resilient high-pressure ridge that has been lying over California for years now, since 2012. In satellite, what you will see is the white, which means the moisture, the clouds, and so forth. Well, there's a big black hole over most of California and the ocean. And the size of that black hole, where it's just, there's no clouds, no moisture. So, you know, there's nothing clouded in that picture. All you see is the ocean and Earth from satellite view. It's perfectly clear. It's like a perfect circle. And that circle is larger than the size of California and other states combined. And what you see swirling around that circle is the moisture, the jet stream, the directions of the jet stream. And what could make such an anomaly? I mean, is this natural? And Dane will go up and down 1,000 times, as he said. No, it isn't. We have to be aware of the fancy technological instruments that have been made that deteriorate. And one of them is ionospheric heater, better known to some people as HARP. And HARP means high auroral waves, or, you know, it's a long-winded abbreviation, and I won't go into that. But what HARP or ionospheric heaters do is you can take wave activity with microwaves, you know, certain wavelengths travel, scalar waves, I guess you call them, where it's not, I don't know if it's electromagnetic, but the point I'm getting at is when you send, you take tremendous amount of energy from Earth, electrical energy, you put it in a tower and transmit waves. These waves go way up there to the ionosphere. They excite the electrons because in the ionosphere, it's so high up, you know, the atoms don't stay together. You know, they split up and they fly around, the electrons fly around. So when these waves interact with the electrons, they excite and they create this incredible movement, this energy. That energy is transformed to heat energy. So what you have is a high-pressure heat dome, and it's so intense, the waves reflect back down toward Earth, and it's just like a pressure bubble. And what surrounds it is the cooler, moist area. So, in effect, what you've done is you've taken moisture that creation over a billion years has, you know, designed. We have a system of getting wet, getting dry, because if we are always wet, we die. If we're always dry, we die. So weather is everything, depends on. And so we get this dry area. Moisture's moved to another direction. Where does it often go? To the eastern United States. And when it goes to the eastern United States, where most of the population is in what I call a nation, an empire nation. We are an empire nation. We have military bases throughout the world, 700, 800, who knows. So we can activate those bases at any time according to the will of the empire, according to the will of the criminals at the top. And I call them criminals. Again, it's just a centralized power is corrupting. It's just a basic premise that is hard to learn. How could our leaders be criminals? And yet there's evidence that is very hard truth to swallow. But when you look at satellite evidence, when you look at photo film evidence of jets spraying on and off trails of aerosols, not condensation trails, then you know something's wrong. And it's a lot easier just to say, well, you know, some scientists said it's just condensation, but that's a lie. You know, we just prefer to stay in our own desires, our own lusts, our own wants, and our own paradigm, I guess you call it, and not look out and say, stop it. That's what we finally said with nuclear tests. Stop it. We know people are getting cancer by the thousands and thousands in the United States from this technology of nuclear weapons and nuclear tests. Same can be said for the pandemic. It's a sign of the times that we've been in this paradigm of growth from fossil fuels. So what I lost and put behind, I'll try to summarize in four parts. That, as Dane Wigington was sharing some study, some psychological study, the study was saying, why, what's different? If it's documented that we're on the path to extinction and there have been previous extinctions which have wiped out most of life on Earth, but yet, you know, enough life came back and started thriving again, you know, almost like the cyclical thing. So one of the signs of extinction is increased gases in the atmosphere, heat-trapping gases that make it hotter. And, you know, the chemistry's changed. But the point of it is studies show that extinctions don't happen fast. It takes, you know, maybe thousands of years. But this study says, well, look, extinction, we're looking at 200 to 300 years in which human activity is spiraling this planet into the fastest extinction far and away in the entire history of the planet. What is the entire history of the planet in terms of time? Well, again, time is relative. Some believe time is only in thousands of years. Some believe it's in billions of years, whatever. But the point of it is, why would we be going into the fastest extinction? And to start, number one, is that this discovery of fossil fuels enabled us to go on high-energy juice. So with all the power that we had available at our hands and with our tools, we can consume the Earth that much faster, and we can grow the population that much faster. And and as we came to be and as we came to build civilization independent from creation, in other words, the Earth became ours. We became the gods of Earth, and we will do what we will with Earth. Again, these are assertions according to Daniel Quinn, the author of Ishmael, that, okay, if we're going to do what we will with Earth and we have the tools and energy to do so, again, we have the ability to rape, pillage, and plunder the Earth, which we've done in these last 200 years, especially in my personal lifetime. And, you know, as Brother Nakomi mentioned, as he's, you know, five decades of life, he's on the edge of the civil rights struggle. He's, you know, barely able to grasp that what was going on because he was so young at the time. But, you know, the depth of the suffering then and then what's coming now, happening now, is an awakening process for much more than half the population. You know, in the last 50 years, though, yes, there's been wars, but it's at least in the United States, the misery level just hasn't been too bad. We've lived quite well. So we're awakening, as Brother Nakomi said, to something, the atonement. There's a finality about it where we have to decide, not by some waiting for some miracle, but by finding the miracle within us, within our soul, to seek out God. And as I've said in past blogs, it's Eckhart Tolle, the author of The Power of Here and Now, that there's two ways, two directions we can go. And the seeking that was in the scripture of Peter, how we, the actions we take with charity, with knowledge, learning, that's outward expression. That's what the One Life Force takes delight in, all these creative ways we express ourselves. But there's another way of God too. The God within us that acts, but the God within us where we are in a calm. In other words, when we're completely calm and praying genuinely, mystically, religiously, God comes in us. We go back to the source. So we allow the source to fill us. So this going back and forth between expression and prayer, you know, we can't just do one. We can't, like monks on a monastery living far away, though there's nothing wrong with that, but just living in a state of meditation and prayer, there's something missing. And that's what Osho says. And that's why Buddha was such a rebel in many ways, is we can't just be still. We can't just be ascetics. Ascetics meaning people who lived the minimal life, practically starving themselves to death, being part of, not being a part of society, but just being somewhat isolated and prayerful. But it's hard to explain. But, you know, that's what I'm getting at, is it's very important to understand that given the crisis we're in, you know, what can we do? So let me go to my outward way to deal with this crisis that Dane Wigington so clearly puts together and ties together in such a dynamic way. I'm doing a project with a crossword puzzle. And my 11 years working at the hub of the Minnesota Post Office, where all the mail gets distributed, whether it goes to Duluth, Minnesota, or Rochester, Minnesota. The hub is in Eagan, Minnesota, where I work. And I'm very near the other major hub, which is Minneapolis, and the other one, the airport. So we distribute mail all over. We meet over-the-road drivers who go out of state far, you know, as far as, who knows, Florida, Colorado, California. It's an amazing place, and there's amazing people where I work, because we have many in the population who are hard of hearing or deaf. They do quite well. They operate heavy machinery that's dangerous, but they're very alert, no problem. We have people from Russia, Ukraine, you name it. The post office is a place of international labor. And as I used to be in the labor movement, it excites me because, you know, the idea of socialism, the ideology, I was attracted to it because I liked, it was interesting to be around, when I worked at a circuit board shop, around people from different backgrounds. I learned so much from them, from different countries, you know, their culture, what they eat, what kind of activities they do. Post office, I'm finding, is as good a place as any to spread the spot fires awareness. And as to my dismay, going to environmental groups and getting rejected, going to a college to apply for a graduate school, basically getting rejected. The topic of climate engineering is the toughest one in the world, in my opinion, my humble opinion. And it connects to 9/11. It connects to this pandemic. In fact, climate engineering, jet spraying, may well be a way to spread the virus. You know, the common official narrative is that, well, flights out of China caused this pandemic. People were sick and they were in an airplane and others got it. And so they landed in parts all over the world and it spread. Well, you know, that's conveniently, it makes sense. But how about this pandemic within 1 month hit 35 countries? How is it that some people who had this virus and, you know, confirmed in lab were from the boonies, the sticks? In other words, they weren't even close to any jet traveling person. So it, you know, there's so many questions to be raised, but let's put it simple. Look up into the sky. That's all you got to do and ask about it. Inquire. Why do we see pockmarked patterns? Why do we see wavy patterns? Even in satellite, where it looks like waves, it doesn't look like a cloud cover. It looks like somebody made it. And there are days when if there's particles, especially aluminum or barium, if there's metallic particles that are in these aerosols and you have the wireless transmission of electricity from towers, the invisible power, then that, as Tesla has demonstrated, that power can move those particles. It can spread them out. It can send them east or west, north or south. So having been to environmental groups and they volunteered with them a little bit and trying to get my word out, they censored me. Trying to get the word out at, well, not trying, but doing. You know, I put displays out at the library. It was going terrific. I was able to hand out facts and photo sheets to people, engage in dialogue, and they would thank me for the new, you know, the new revelation that awakens them to the fact that, you know, if enough people are aware, a critical mass of awareness, just like nuclear tests. It took too long, but we finally stopped it. But then again, in this ever-increasing crisis world, we're instituting old measures. You know, now we're building up nuclear technology again. Now we're building more nuclear plants. So it's a snake eating its tail, and that's one of the four things that Dane mentioned, is that we're going catabolic. It's a system that it's so juiced up and so energized and so thriving, it's like a cancer. We just bubble and bubble and bubble, and based on growth, got to grow. But when there's no oil left, we start eating ourselves. Our social assets get taken up. So how do you make money? Well, you make a pandemic. And how do you make money from the pandemic? You make several billion masks. And how do you pull it off? Well, you use your technologies and you use your media to scare people. The pandemic you should be scared of. Who knows what kind of beasts are in these, are being spread about that have been developed in the lab. All one has to do is see the movie clip, Plandemic, 20-minute clip. You'll understand. Or all one has to do is listen to Robert Kennedy Jr. talk about vaccines and all the dangers. Not that he's against it, but he knows that the history of injury and the immunity of the pharmaceutical industrial complex is unreasonable. It's absurd that they have no accountability and continue to make $1 trillion. So the political sides, one about the pandemic, we need other medicines. The other side saying we got to wear masks, we got to lock down. So, you know, one side that probably has some truth about the pandemic is that there are other medicines that we should have been taking all along, just along with vitamin C and vitamin D and zinc, which would prevent this problem that You know, most people get it that are young enough, healthy enough. Yeah, they get it, but that doesn't mean crisis. They don't even have symptoms. So there's a political split. It's the desperation of the criminality of this centralized power, that the direction to grow until there's no host left, until there's no oil left. So if there's no oil left and we can't make a profit, well, let's just start eating our tail, have a pandemic, start killing people out of fear, out of complications with existing health that we're already dumbed down with our health. The aluminum that is sprayed in the sky, the metallic particles that, you know, the smaller the particle, the more dangerous that it gets in, yet not measured. Or the junk food that's at the convenience store, that high sugar, gluten. So I can go on and on. But anyways, I'm very happy to report that the crossword puzzle that I've made, it says, heroes work here. You'll go postal with this puzzle. So if I can get this puzzle, which has about 30 items, and I give the answers in back, so people are welcome to challenge or just, you know, they'll look at the question and answer. And as they look at the question or the statement on, say, 1A or one down or 25 across, you know, they can look at the answers right away, or they can struggle a little bit to think about it. So I hope the puzzle gets the attention of people. I'm going to send a photo fact. I mean, I'm going to clip a photo fact sheet of geoengineeringwatch.org with it, so I can give it to truck drivers. I can leave it on break tables so that, you know, people casually eating, looking at newspapers, whatnot, they can grab this crossword puzzle. And let me tell you, in 11 years of post office work, there's a lot of clerks and people that they're good at puzzles. So I'm going to give it to them, and we'll see. I'll keep you posted. I'm running out of time. And again, I apologize for losing my notes, but maybe that's the best thing that can happen sometimes. I just go off the top of my head. And because I do study a lot, I spend a lot of time on this. I take notes. So sometimes I'm just so overflowing with information, I go every direction that it's got to calm down. But anyways, bless you all and read your Bible. But do understand that beyond the Bible, there are sayings of Jesus. There are other cultures, primitive cultures, they call it. But we must ask at this point, humans are humans. And at one time, species, we belong to Earth. Can we get back to that? Can we keep our knowledge and our ability? Can we be stewards of the Earth, that we can reduce our technologies that deteriorate the Earth, but we can keep technologies, perhaps the cell phone, the Internet? Yeah, we can keep that. But at the same time, we'll select the tools that can start healing this planet. And the biggest tool we got now is to get the word out with the Internet and whatnot and stop climate engineering. And when we stop that, that will be an awakening process. When the critical mass, just like with nuclear testing, awoke to the fact that we've got to quit it, when we see the results, that instead of dryness and desiccants that dry the earth and kill creatures, including soil microbes up to whales, then we can begin healing, and it's going to be miserable for many years. We can't undo what's been undone just in a few years. But those, as we struggle to survive as a species and as the entire web of life, rather than turn into a ball of hot rock like Venus, we'll reconnect with the universe, with creation, with the one life. So thank you for listening, and in the next blog, I'll probably go to part 3 of this Jesus sayings forbidden from the Bible. All right, that's all.